And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3707 of the Survival Podcast. It is Monday, July the 21st, 2025. And once again, we are here together for another episode of the show that teaches you how to live that better life if times get tough or even if they don't. Today's episode is going to be very topical. It won't be, you know, one of my more typical evergreen episodes, though. I mean, the stuff in it will be valuable for a long time to come, but we're going to be talking about a lot of real-time things happening right now and what they mean in the near future and the somewhat distant future, I guess. We're going to talk today about the Genius Act passed, and of course, the special libertarians are freaking out. It's a CBDC, man. It really is. Trust me, bro. Yeah, it's not. It's just not. Well, it could evolve into a CBDC. You know what could evolve into a CBDC? The banks, the Federal Reserve, everything. Everything could evolve into. It could become. Right? Whenever anybody says that, it's the same shit the idiots with COVID did. You know, it could evolve into a more deadly virus. It could turn into your Aunt Edna on the way to Atlanta, too. I mean, this is dumb. It is not a CBDC. In fact, it would make pulling off what a CBDC is supposed to do pretty damn hard, in my view. We also are going to talk a little bit about something called the Clarity Act and the Anti-CBDC Act and what it does and does not do to prevent a CBDC. Now, the first act, the Genius Act, is done. It's signed into law by the president. It originated in the Senate, got thrown over to the House. So when the House voted on it, that was it. It's done. These other two acts that are going to be thrown over the fence of the Senate now were passed by the House, the Clarity Act and the Anti-CBDC Act. I'll tell you why, overall, this is pretty decent stuff. Doesn't mean I'm, you know, dancing naked on the roof or anything like that. But it's overall, it's a pretty positive thing for the entire space. Then we're going to talk about, should you ever sell your Bitcoin to get more Bitcoin? Should you ever sell your Bitcoin? Cause I got a person say, you said to always end the day with more sats than you started with. Well, if I started selling my Bitcoin when it was at an all-time high and buying it back when it went, no, that's not what I mean. But maybe there's a time to sell your Bitcoin specifically to get more Bitcoin. Maybe. If you do everything right, if you plan ahead for now. How long will it last? I don't know. But so far, nothing coming down the pipeline closes the loophole that you can use for yourself so that you can sell Bitcoin to get more Bitcoin long-term. How? I'll tell you when we get there. It'll work. You'll understand. You'll be like, oh, wow, that actually does get you more Bitcoin by selling your Bitcoin. How? Yeah, just understand tax law, guys, especially tax law exceptions, the ones that tell you how not to do something. Next up, we've been talking about a lot about the educational system. I've talked about colleges laying people off, closing down satellite campuses, et cetera. Most of it's been smaller schools or even a big school like Penn State. The satellite campuses, they're closing. Like I told you, Penn State Schuylkill probably had about 1,300 students at it when I was in high school because it was just down the way from me growing up in Pennsylvania. So, yeah, you know, so how about the University of Southern California? USC is going to have layoffs, and they are looking at a $200 million deficit. $200 million in the hole this year. $200 million, that's some real money. I mean, that starts to add up and shit. That's enough zeros to matter. Of course, they blame shifts in federal support. That's why I have a question about that. Federal support of a state school, is it really an independent state school if they rely on federal tax dollars and if the federal government's give? See what I mean? Like, is there a whole problem here? Doesn't this sound an awful lot like all the NGOs that were in deep trouble as soon as they stopped getting government money, and are you really an NGO if you rely on government money to exist? Yeah, it's all bullshit. We'll talk about that. And a little bit on the bigger implication. I'm going to tell you to get ready. I think it's likely the last alt season. And when I get done with the CBDC, Clarity Act, Genius Act, you might think, Jack, that's actually good reasons for alt crypto to stick around. Yeah, not most of it, though. You got to know what alt season means to know what's happening right now and why this is probably good. If you are holding some old shit coins from the past, it's probably going to be your last good chance to get rid of that shit before everything changes. And it actually does have to do with things being better for some crypto projects but worse for a lot of other ones due to the Clarity Act, which is, in my opinion, very, very likely to pass. Then I had a question. Said, when can I finally go out and buy one of them SBRs? For you non-initiated, that would be a short barrel rifle or a suppressor. Well, you're like, well, you could do that right now. Yeah, but when can I get one of them $0 tax stamps, that the non-tax tax stamp? For, I'll tell you when, but it's a real simple answer. It's a tax law, so it starts the next tax year. So you can surmise when that is. We'll talk a little bit about how you should be looking at that right now. What comes between now and year's end? Well, what's next economically? Trade deals. Trade deals is what's coming. And Trump is going to be throwing these out like Oprah at Christmas time. You get a trade deal. You get a trade deal. Everybody gets a trade deal except, you'll see when we get there. You'll see. Next, is AI really coming for your job? I think AI is coming for your job. They're going to take our jobs. Is it? Well, maybe. Not likely. Possibly. Then it depends. We'll talk about all of those today. And what happens? I have a question for you. What happens when all the AI LLMs, this little thing that only like a guy like Jack asks, right? What happens when they all hit their ceiling as to what they can do for the foreseeable future? Do you even understand what I'm saying? Like, there's a certain level of quality that you could expect, and we're not there, right? But there's, like, when you ask AI something, when you ask a large language model, this is your Geminis, your ChatGPTs, your Groks, right? There's a certain level of accuracy, expertise, and speed that any reasonable person would be like, this is it. This is great. Now, if we could do something beyond that, well, wonderful, but like, this is totally within our expectations. What happens when we hit that ceiling? And everybody does. And there's really no difference. What I mean is when I go to Grok and I ask a question, and I go to Gemini, I ask a question, I go to ChatGPT and I ask a question, I pretty much get the same answer from everybody the same way. And they're all actually right. Then what happens? You might be like, what the hell is he talking about? What happens to the competitive landscape at that point? Right? Let's put it this way. Why did you primarily, unless you went on to something like Brave Search or something like that to get away from the surveillance behind Google, why did almost everybody on the planet stop using Yahoo and Bing and Lycos and all the other shit, and almost everybody on the planet used Google? Because you got better results. Plain and simple. To this day, if you search Google and Yahoo, you just get better results from Google. What happens when you get equal results from everybody to the competitive landscape? Do you even see where I'm going with this? This might become really important in the future, and you might start understanding the concept of integration a lot bigger and how AI is literally going to exist inside of everything technological in the future. It's already happening. There's already, I use Outlook, and I have never used it, but there's already a thing there called Copilot, which I imagine is an AI tool to help me answer my emails. What about when AI is in everything? What will that look like? What will the monetization model be? And does that relate at all to things like the Genius Act? Can it? Maybe it can. I think some of you just put it all together. And then just for fun, I'm going to give you an update on some mushroom stuff that I've been doing with my mushroom grow room. And then I have a really important finishing segment today. And that segment is simply called, the most important trades you make are between you and your future self. We're going to kind of rehash some of the things we talked about with Bitcoin last week and ending every day with more than you began with. I'm going to give you if you don't like Bitcoin, I'm going to give you a different way to look at that and come to the same, not as good, but the same conclusion. I'm going to fix it for you if you think it's broken. I'm going to make it work for you. But do you know that every single action you take, every single thing you do today, you're making a deal with yourself in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years. You're changing the course of your own arc. You're changing what you will have or what you won't have 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now. Did you ever even think about it that way? I'm going to try to get you to think about it that way in a big way today. And I know someone who can help you do that as we get into our sponsorships today. Sponsor of the day, number one today, is John Pugliano. You should check out his podcast. It's called the Wealth Steading Podcast. And John is one of us, man. He is a podcaster. He is an investment manager. But he's also a gardener. He's a prepper. He's a ham radio operator. He's a prior service Marine and military officer. And he is also a liquid millionaire. As an investment manager, he decided that until he could make himself into a liquid millionaire as a blue-collar worker, he had no business doing it for anybody else. So he did that first. John and I have been working together since 2010. He is an author, inventor, and the founder of Investable Wealth LLC. Again, his podcast is called the Wealth Steading Podcast, where you can learn to grow your wealth like a garden. And I've been on John about writing a new book. John, quite a while ago, very, very forward-thinking, wrote a book. It was called The Robots Are Coming. And I've been suggesting that John write another book, and I think you guys should harass him until he does. The book would be called, wait for it, right? You know I got something. The Robots Are Here. The Robots Are Here. I think it'd be interesting for John to kind of update this thing. Now, next up today is Above Phone. Hey, do you know that your phone spies on you, sends information to the government, and is your information is for sale to base on anybody that wants to buy it? Some people think it's like for sale to the highest bidder. As bad as that would be, it would actually be better than the way it is, because that would mean one person has your data. But they don't sell it to the highest bidder. They sell it to all the bidders. They sell it to anybody. It's like, you want this data, you can just buy it from us. And then the apps spy on you. The app manufacturers spy on you. All those free apps, why would they be free? Why would they be completely free unless you were the product? Because that's how they work. With Above Phone, you can make all of that go away. You can have your own private ecosystem for apps that do not spy on you, because it can't. Your phone will have additional security to prevent your provider from spying on you. And if you do need to use an app that's just not available as a private independent app, and you've got to use something from, you know, Google Play or something like that, you can actually put it in a jail where it only does its tracking nonsense when you allow it to, only when you're actively using it. And it's really something you should check out, Above Phone. They also have the Above Book, which is what I'm podcasting from my Above Book today. And they have Above Tablets as well. Check them out. And if you're like, I don't know if I'll be able to handle this new tech, again, these guys, they will give you an expert who will help walk you through onboarding onto your new device when you pick up your phone. And you get $75 off of it if you're an MSB member. With that in mind, I have not done an MSB sale in over a year. Somebody reached out to me and said, hey, Jack, occasionally you used to seem like you did some sales on MSB every once in a while. What's up, man? And, you know, the person was right. I looked it up. I haven't done a sale since June last year, so it's been over a year. And part of what happened is, you know, I had a very long-running sale during COVID that I made a pledge that I would keep the sale for as long as they were doing lockdowns. And I never thought it would be as long as it was. And so I had to keep that basically a de facto price of almost a year that I kept it on sale. So I really didn't go back and do it again up until, again, last year. And now this year, I've gone another year without doing it. So right now, you can get MSB for $35. That is a hell of a deal, because $50 is a good deal. You can help support the show. And here's the cool part. It absolutely does apply to your recurring membership. So when you renew, you will keep that locked in price. Discount code SUMMER, 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 all lowercase. You can't mess it up. SUMMER, and you get MSB at $35 a year. All right, so let's dig into this. Let's start off with what the Genius Act did and what it did not do. What the Genius Act does is it actually enables banks to issue their own stable coins. But I think there's a lot of people saying a lot of stupid shit about, it's a backdoor to a CBDC, man. Centralized digital bank currency. So you'd have to have a centralized individual single currency to be a central bank digital currency. It would have to be issued by the central bank. It's not. Or at least only members of the central banking cartel could issue it. That's not the way it works either. So it fails on its face. Any bank in the United States can issue stable coins under this. But they can't just do it. There's certain things they have to be able to do. And one of those things is they actually have to set up an entity to do it with that is not managed by the bank itself. All these people going hysterical, any of them tell you that yet? They literally have to create, it's almost like a, think of it like a subcorporation. Its only purpose is to hold one-to-one backing against the currencies that are issued. Then they can use it in their bank, but it has to be managed by this, you know, kind of additional party that they have to create, this entity that they have to create. Additionally, if it's going to have, I believe, less than $100 billion, no, I'm sorry, $10 billion, somewhere in that range, it's either $10 or $20 billion, you don't have to even be under the federal umbrella. It's some number of billions. It's not insignificant. I believe it's $10 billion. So a small regional bank, like the bank I have down here in Texas called Frost, they have about $42 billion in total deposits across everything. So it's quite reasonable that they could issue stables up to that $10 billion number and do everything that they would want to do with stables. That would be what, one quarter of all their deposits in all forms, everywhere, right? So they wouldn't even go under the federal government. They would go under the Texas state banking oversight components of our government. So right there, you're kind of out of the world of central bank digital currencies. It just isn't, and I understand why people feel this way, because why would they do something good for us? I think that's really where most of these people are coming from. And I don't think they are doing it because it's good for us. I think they're doing it because it's good for them. So I think the instinct there is correct that, you know, you got to kind of, you don't trust government. You know, I trust Tijuana tap water more than I trust government. I would go to Chipotle and eat four burritos and trust a 4 hour later fart after eating four burritos from Chipotle before I would trust the government. So it's not that I trust the government. It's that I look at the logistical nature of what they passed, what it does and what it doesn't do, and say, can this really be a central bank digital currency? Well, anything can be anything. Again, this whole, well, it could evolve into, it could become this. Let's look at what it actually is. So a bank issues a stable coin. I'm holding an actual challenge coin from my military service here, 228th Aviation Regiment, okay? But they issue a stable coin. And there's a digital coin that acts as a U.S. dollar that has a one-to-one backing, meaning that entity that bank was required to form for each one of these has got to have $1 in U.S. bonds. That's what this is really all about, is causing more depth of liquidity in the bond market to help bail the United States government out. That's what's really going on here. So now you have this coin, and you want to buy something with it. So you send it to a person you're paying a bill, like you could be paying your electric bill with it. You could be paying your rent with it, or your mortgage payment with it, or you could be buying some eggs from a duck farmer. Like it could be a private transaction, a more of a commercial transaction. It could be your groceries. It could be anything. Well, see, because it's a stable coin, they can see where you spend it and where it went and what you bought with it. Well, I mean, sorta. If they could go to Kroger and maybe get your receipt, but basically they would know you bought $400 worth of groceries last week from Kroger. They already know that. Go log into your bank account. Look at your bank statement. That's what you're talking about. It's not any different. Well, they could freeze it, and they freeze people's bank accounts all the time, don't they? Well, they could disallow certain classes of purchases, and banks do this all the time already, don't they? In other words, does this actually enable them to do anything that they can't already do from that standpoint? And the answer is no. And I think one of the things people leave off of a CBDC or central bank digital currency is that to make it really do what they want it to do, it has to go along with something called a social credit score. And when you put those two things together the way that they have in China, you can get complete economic control of a population. Well, here's what I'm going to tell you. this whole idea that the Genius Act does this is dumb, and I have some people I really respect that are spouting that right now, and I'm sorry, but smart people can say dumb things. And if they're going to do that, they're going to do it anyway. With or without a Genius Act, they don't need the banks to issue stable coins to have a central bank digital currency. They can just convert. That's how you would do it. You would convert the dollar into a single unified currency. If you want a central bank digital currency, the last thing you want is 100 banks, each with their own version of a stablecoin, some running on different blockchains than other ones. But I don't really believe in this hyperly competent government that supposedly is going to build a surveillance tool to. I mean, come on. Right now, if they want to know something about anybody, they send a letter and they find out. And that's not going to change anytime soon. Well, it's all AML, KYC. It's a bank account. It's a bank account. But you don't have to be AML, KYC to receive the money, only if you want to pull it out of your bank in that form. But you're already AML, KYC with your bank. See, this already exists. Now, here's some other pieces to this. So again, these next two acts, they did not pass yet, but both of them look like they're going to pass. They're both headed over to the Senate. Remember, in the Senate, the form these are in, they cannot be filibustered, right? This is not like some giant omnibus bill or something like that where you need 60 votes just to move the damn thing. There's procedural methods to get them to a vote, so they need 50 yeses. Because if you get 50 yeses, you get a J.D. Vance and you get a yes on them. I think the odds are very high for both of these. The Clarity Act, to me, is one of the more interesting of the two. What the Clarity Act does is it brings clarity. It's exactly what it is. I have a great article linked to in the audio notes today where y'all can read more if you want to learn about it. But it essentially, for once, they named an act what it actually does. Like the Patriot Act was like the Anti-Patriot Act, right? The Freedom Act was the Anti-Freedom Act. The Affordable Care Act was really the Unaffordable Care Act. The Clarity Act actually provides clarity in the digital asset space. And it's actually good for all you shitcoiners, by the way. It defines digital assets clearly with a consistent legal definition that says this is a digital asset, right? It splits oversight between the SEC and the CFTC, right? So it actually puts oversight of all of this under a conglomerate of two federal agencies rather than letting one ride roughshod over everything, right? Because you get one bad guy at the head of one agency and completely turn everything tits up. By splitting it, you have to have some level of consensus. So that's a good thing. It creates investment contract assets. That makes certain tokens that started out securities later to be treated as commodities if they become sufficiently decentralized. In other words, a lot of these crypto projects, they start out, some dude comes up with an idea, he puts a dev team together, they start building this shit, and it's a big grift. It really is. What they do is they put this out, they get some money built up, they pay for hype with their own shitcoin, printing money out of thin air, they get it on some exchanges, if it develops enough liquidity, then they can cash their shit in and make money. But some of them, to be fair, even though I don't think it's the best way to do things, are actually trying to build something that does something. And what the act is saying is if you started out where it's controlled, it's now going to be treated like what it should have always been treated under U.S. law. This is not my opinion, okay? This is not what I think should happen. Nothing I'm saying today is what I think should happen. It's what is. And when I say it should have always been treated under current U.S. law, I'm saying if I'm a judge sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution and the law as written, then these things qualify as securities because you enrich yourself off the backs of others. Okay? You can completely control it, and yet you profit from the results when others buy and sell it. What they're saying now is if you can move to truly decentralized, if you can launch, get it off the ground, and eventually you actually have a real blockchain with real validators that are really independent, and one person can't manipulate things, and it comes in as a mature blockchain, which is something else in the act, then you can basically stop being regulated as a security and be regulated as a commodity. In other words, gold is not a security, it's a commodity. Bitcoin is not a security, it's a commodity. Ethereum as a security, though it could become a commodity under this act if they can prove decentralization. But as long as the one person can throw switches and change shit, as this act is written right now, it would not be a commodity. It would stay as a security. It requires if you are a crypto business operating in the United States and you're going to roll out a new shit coin, you have to register. So do exchanges, brokers, and dealers. It's pretty much the case already anyway, but there's a new way to do that underneath this. It'll allow limited fundraising without SEC registration. A project would be able to raise up to $75 million a year before falling under that registration. And then if it matured enough, it could then come back out from under it as a commodity. It opens the door for a project like Litecoin. It's actually mined, but it was controlled by the Litecoin Foundation. But today, can the Litecoin Foundation really do anything to change Litecoin other than the consensus mechanism built into the blockchain? I don't actually know the answer to that. My gut is no, they can't. There was pre-mine and all that, but at this point, it's a decentralized blockchain. So this would then say that that could be handled differently how it's regulated. It protects self-custody rights. It literally says in this act that you will have the right to keep your crypto assets, Bitcoin and others, in a wallet of your choosing without any oversight whatsoever. Somebody likes the beard. I need to comment on the beard in a minute. I'll do that before we go to the next section. It also has delisting rules for unsafe tokens. So there are, shit coins, right? They really don't belong on these exchanges, but what happens is once the exchange lets them in, it's just easier to leave them there and to get rid of them. That gives them a sense of legitimacy. So there's some of these tokens you can go out and buy, but they have no depth of liquidity at all. You can't get rid of them. So I guess that's considered a consumer protection. It preserves existing financial laws. So it says that this act applies to crypto assets. It doesn't change how other securities and commodities are currently regulated, and it ensures international coordination and AML compliance. That's American money laundering. They're making sure that you're not using crypto to launder money is what they're saying in it. Yeah, am I completely happy with it? No. Is it overall good or bad for the crypto space? It's very good. Is it overall good or bad for Bitcoin? It's great for Bitcoin because it doesn't affect Bitcoin. It doesn't really do anything to Bitcoin at all. And then we also have another act called the Anti-CBDC Act. And what it says is basically the Federal Reserve is barred from creating a central bank digital currency unless they were to have the expressed permission from Congress, or to take an act of Congress to allow them to do it. See, that's what I'm saying. They're going to do it. But see, that was always true. That was always true. Now, here's the reality. One Congress cannot place a restriction on another future body of Congress. In other words, the Congress cannot pass a law stating that the Congress in the future can't change the law they just passed. That's not constitutional. The most ironclad way to attempt to do that, and it has been done, is a constitutional amendment. But you can't have Congress pass a law and then say, and it cannot be changed by a future Congress. It doesn't work that way. That's not how our system of government works. So stating it that way is simply honest legal language in it. So I don't see any CBDC coming from this at all. I actually see stablecoins being issued under this act that aren't even bank issued. They're going to be corporate issued. And if they, again, if they are kept under the 10 billion number, they cannot even have to go to the federal government with any other shit. They can just basically exist under state regs. Well, why would you do that? Well, intercompany billing, company to company billing. So you could have a settlement layer without the banks at all. In other words, a big supplier, let's say General Motors, could actually issue about $10 billion in stable coins and use it within their own economy in Arlington, Texas, under the Texas state government. So that they could, let's say, pay for parts that they buy from a supplier in Texas, something like that. Especially companies that routinely transact back and forth. They buy from each other. They have a fairly balanced trade arrangement, but there has to be a cash exchange during that period of time. This could save corporations, large corporations, billions of dollars, because it wouldn't be like GM could only do up to $10 billion as GM. That one project could only be $10 billion. So there's a lot of potential here for a lot of internal accounting and company-to-company accounting. And if it was done right and programmed right, you know, we're always talking about we want to keep everything secret, right? We want everything to be private. When you're a giant corporation and you're a publicly traded corporation, there is no private. There's no real private, not from the government, not from the SEC. For these organizations to actually have a transaction history that can be audited with a spreadsheet and makes their tax preparation easier, that saves them money, and to be able to drop that in to, you know, something like an AI model and then say, how do we lean out our expenses? There's a lot to this visibility that a lot of – I'm telling you, people think all these big companies, they don't pay taxes because they're cheating. They're not cheating. They have too much to lose by cheating. They get fried by cheating. They don't pay taxes by following the letter of the tax law. They don't pay taxes by following the 95% of the tax law that says how you get out of doing what the 5% says you had to do. But this just isn't. And, you know, thanks to some of my friends, and I'm not being mean when I say that way. I mean really my friends, like John Bush. There's a lot of people in his audience. We have a lot of cross-pollination that are like, oh, my God, it's a CBDC. No, it's not. Is John lying to you? No, he's just wrong. That's all. He's just wrong. I believe that John Bush has incredible integrity. I believe that he believes what he's saying. But I also think he and many others, they've been on this perch so long of they're going to get a CBDC. It's the WEF. They're the enemy. They're coming to get us, right? They want to control everything. You'll own it. Like, they've been on that for so long that the perception bias that they read everything through comes through that. Anyway, let's move on. When should you sell your Bitcoin to get more Bitcoin? Now, I never thought – let me talk about the beard real quick, right, for those that are on the video either live or later. If you notice, I just got a haircut. Hair's all squared away. Nice short clipper action, and the beard looks a little poofy. We're going for a Santa beard this year just for fun. For the family, for the fall workshop, it'll be Santa Jack's workshop this year. First place that we're going to be at the YMCA down the road instead of at my house. More people. It'll be fun for that. It's just always something that we've talked about. My wife and always talked about my retirement plan, become a real Santa. You know, it's the real beard Santa. Those guys make a lot of money in 2 months out of the year. I don't think I ever really have that in me, but it's been just a fun running joke. And she said, why don't you just do it for fun this year? So my haircut gal is basically letting it grow because to get it there by November, I got to start now. And so what that means is I'm currently in, like, you know how chickens start out? They're so cute. And then they turn into chickens that are not cute, but they look like a chicken. And they're kind of pretty in a way. But in the middle, they have that pterodactyl, you know, T-Rex, weird, funky look. That's kind of where my beard is right now. Like, I can only get it so well groomed until it gets long enough to make it all shape and work. So that's what's going on with the beard. And if you are listening to the audio and you want to know what I'm talking about, you just come on over, get the episode 3707 and check out the video. You'll see exactly what I mean. I've got some stuff that's just not quite willing to play ball the right way yet. Just to have some fun. All right. So now, when can you sell your Bitcoin and get more Bitcoin? So what this person wrote in and said is, if that's the goal, then when we're at an all-time high, why should I just sell it, let it sit as cash? I know it's going to come back down, and when it does, I'll buy it back. There's two problems with that. One, you don't know what the top is. Two, you don't know it'll come back down to where it is now, okay? There are still people waiting for it to go back to 20,000. And that ain't happening. Okay. From the last cycle, right? Like, that's not happening. That's gone. So you don't know. So now you're gambling. You're not investing and holding anywhere. The other side is you have to do really well with that approach for it really to work out, because you're going to take such a haircut on the capital gains tax, especially if the short-term capital gains tax is a higher rate. So you're gambling and you have a certain amount of instant loss of the gain. So when you go to buy back, you don't have what you had to buy back with when you sold. Okay? But there's an exception to this. And it's one of my favorite things in the world. Juicy little tax loopholes that are available to anybody. So for now, and in none of these bills I talked about today, and in no bill that I'm aware of that's on a track to be approved anywhere right now, we have something called a wash rule loophole in crypto assets. What's a wash rule? Well, if I own something, let's say it's Ford stock, and I'm down on my stock like 25%. I have like 100 grand in it, and it's worth 75 right now. Okay. I can sell it and capture the $25,000 loss, but I cannot buy Ford stock for 30 days. I can't just sell it, take the loss, and immediately buy it back. It's illegal. And if it's a mutual fund that's like a mutual fund of the Magnificent Seven stocks, right, and it's underneath like Fidelity, I can't sell it and then, I bought, you know, the BlackRock ETF, but it's the same. If it's a like kind investment, right, they say, no, you can't do that. It's a wash rule. But crypto doesn't have a wash rule. What that means is I can literally sell Bitcoin and buy it back 5 minutes later and capture losses or be responsible for gains. So you have to be careful with this. You also need to make sure that you have segregated your funds appropriately. So what I try to do is I acquire Bitcoin through a tax year, and if I happen to end up down at the end of that cycle, before the end of that tax year, I'll do one trade, and then I'll move it into long-term cold storage. And this is because you can either handle your taxes first in, first out, or you can manage by UTXO. So as long as you keep, and this takes some thought ahead, to keep things done the right way, I can be sitting on Bitcoin that I bought for $600 20 years ago, and I could sell Bitcoin. Let's say I aped in real heavy this year, and let's say we did get a big correction at the end of the year. Well, I could sell and buy back all the Bitcoin that I've transacted at that would contribute to that loss, take that loss, buy it back, and then throw it into long-term storage. And I've done it before. And there's no, and this is not a, it's not a shady practice. This is following the law. This is one of those things you could screen capture video yourself doing it and send it with your taxes. And all it would do is prove that you followed the law. I'm not talking about cheating here. So how does that let you sell your Bitcoin to get more Bitcoin? Well, let's say that I can take a $20,000 loss at my tax rate. That's going to save me about $3,000 to $4,000 in taxes. If I don't do it, I'm going to have to pay it. So by doing it, I'll cut my taxes. I can take that and figure out, ask my accountant, well, how much did this one deduction save me? And if she says $2,700, great. I just take $2,700 of my refund, buy Bitcoin with it. Selling Bitcoin got me more Bitcoin. But it was only because I sold it and bought it back immediately. I don't know how long we're going to be able to play this game for two reasons. One, I have a feeling they're going to close that loophole. There's a lot of crypto-friendly shit going on right now. We're not unaware of this. But the other side is these assholes like the loopholes for themselves. But this is one we all get. So that might get closed. But two, with Bitcoin in particular, I think the days of the big drawdowns are over. I mean, they might come here and there, but don't bet on it. Don't bet on it. But that's the one way you could do it now. The other one I get is, but I want to buy a land. I want to buy a house. What about that? In general, my view is don't. If you can't do it any other way, and so you have to do it because you need the down payment, whatever it is, I can understand that to a degree. If you can get a mortgage, you're better off with the Bitcoin than the mortgage. Taking a Bitcoin loan at 8% versus a mortgage at 6.5% also doesn't make sense. Again, unless you absolutely need the money for some portion of the purchase. But I would look at it this way. Let's say that I go get a mortgage and I'm paying my mortgage, and I get to a point, I got the Bitcoin, and I can't make a mortgage payment. I could always sell enough Bitcoin to make that one payment until I figure out how to get back onto the track of making payments. So I leave myself the option later to do the same thing that I was going to do now without doing it now. Where if I take the Bitcoin and sell it to buy the land, I that's a one-way process. I don't get a mulligan. I don't get the do-over later. So that's my thoughts on that. Like, in the end, I can't tell you what to do, but this is what I would do. Now, next up, I've been talking about the demise of modern education for a very long time, and I've been saying that you're going to see big universities closing down parts of their campuses, closing down buildings, selling off assets. And, I mean, I've been saying that since about, I would say in earnest, since about 2014. So it's 11 years. And now it's all starting to come to fruition. What we have here is the University of Southern California, USC. Okay? This is not a small school. They're sitting on a $200 million deficit. And they're citing shifts in federal support. Yeah, it turns out Orange Man meant it when he said he didn't want to fund your university if you let, you know, men and women's sports and things like that. But there's some other things at play in this as well, some overall cuts. And there's also just less money to go to these people, or even the same amount of money. They're still spending more, and you're getting shortfalls, not really because of federal support. It's, you don't have as many students going to college. You've overbuilt. And there's a lot playing into this. One, people are realizing that a degree isn't worth what you've been told it's worth. Doesn't matter if it's from USC, right? It's still not worth what they say it's worth, unless it's in something specific with specific demand. People are realizing there's a lot of places that you can now put your education, put to your education that will be better for you, especially people that want to do trade style work, electricians, pipe fitters, welders, there's a coders even, high tech, there's high tech paths that are outside the university system that actually focus on just the thing that you're supposed to learn how to do. And then we have a decline in population. People are just having less kids and have been for quite a while. And this was the year we hit something I told you about 10 years ago, the enrollment cliff. Not because I'm a genius or a Spirko Domus or some shit like that. Like, look, guys, everybody knew this was coming. The colleges have been talking about it for as long as I have. They've just been in denial about it. Oh, yeah, it's coming, but we'll be okay because insert reasons here. No. We are reaching the end of an era. We really are. This idea of everybody going to college really started in the 70s, but really kicked up in the 80s and 90s. And at this point, we have schools bragging that, you know, 83% of our graduates go on to college. There is no world in which that makes sense from any school anywhere. Especially when these are like 6A schools and shit with like, you have a graduating class with like 600, 700, 800 people in it, and 80% of those are going to college? Really? Then what is college? It's just what, grade 13? It doesn't mean anything anymore. When everybody has something, it no longer is rare, it no longer has value. You know, if I was an employer in 1965, roughly 30% of people that would apply for a job would have a degree. From the, just if everybody applied equally, right? It's not you have to have a degree. Just about 30 to 40% of people had degrees. Today, it is more like 65, 68% of people have a degree in the United States. And it's more like 80-plus percent have some college. So it just doesn't have the value that it used to. Then you have less people that want the percent of people that want to go is down because they've seen their older siblings and such struggle. They've seen them go to college for 5 years and get drunk and party and they get a job, you know, in a nose ring and they serve coffee for a living. And I'm like, I ain't doing that. And we're beginning to get at a national level more awareness of the alternative career paths. And we're also seeing the rise of AI. And I think the rise of AI is going to drive young people are smart. I know you don't think they are. But when it comes right down to it, people are smart, right? Or in the words of Tommy Lee Jones, a person is smart and people are stupid, right? But a person is smart, and a person that starts thinking about their future and looks at things right now realizes, you know what? AI is not going to figure out how to get a piece of electrical conduit through the double header of that doorway in a commercial office building anytime soon. But I could be doing that. You know, and I mean, I have friends with, you know, young kids in some of these spaces starting at $25 to $35 an hour in apprentice programs. And by the time they're done with their program and they're a journeyman in whatever their skill is, you know, they're making $40 an hour. And they're while they're making in the 20s to 30s, they're working 60 hours a week. That's a lot of money for a young person to make. Why the hell wouldn't they do it? And if I'm looking to the future and I realize, like, if I get this degree in human resources to be an HR Karen, they're going to need a lot less HR Karens in the future. There will always be HR Karens, and no, I'm not going to go into the Coldplay concert thing. Everybody else is. It's enough of that shit. I don't really care. My only lesson there for y'all, if you're doing something you're not supposed to, and somebody points a camera at you, unless it's obvious that you're not supposed to be doing what you're doing, don't do anything differently. All those two idiots had to do was nothing. The camera would have went on them, and it would have went past them, and that would have been the end of it. Nobody knew who those friggin' people were a week ago. When they reacted, that's when they had a problem. But and always I bring that up for those that have not been paying attention to it at all, which you're better off for. The girl's an HR, she's the head Karen. She's the final boss HR Karen for the company. But, you know, there's going to be a lot less HR Karens out there. You just don't need as many of them. I mean, I think HR has been a disaster. You know, HR exists for a reason. It ain't to protect you, it's to protect the company. That's really what it's like, an internal legal department, right, is really what it is. But we're going to be, you know, whatever you're thinking about doing in college right now, if you look at the AI space, whether you think it's true or whether you believe it's true or not, young people are evaluating through the lens of, will that job exist in 10 years? Especially when you're 16. If that job won't exist in 10 years, that's when you're 26, 2 years out of college with $80, $100, $200,000 in debt. I want that. And Gen Z and the alphas that are coming up are starting to think differently on this. So USC is just the beginning. I'm telling you, you're going to hear names of institutions over the next 5 years. Downsizing, laying off, closing parts of campuses, closing secondary campuses that right now you still don't believe you're going to hear. That you still don't believe you're going to hear. You're going to hear their names. Because this whole world is transforming, and the ability to curate your own self-directed learning path today is insane, what can be done with that. In the end, people really want qualified workers. Right now, there's actually talent bleed at some of the top tech companies. Some of the top talent is looking at the whole AI space and going, if there's not a place for me in that here, I'm going to go find a place for me in that somewhere else because I see what it's doing. And so, like, I mean, even companies like Apple right now are having a hard time retaining some of their best talent. So this we'll get to the AI thing. It's not going to take everything, but they're going to need people that are very specifically trained to do very specific things and to use very specific types of tools going forward. Now, real quick, I just want to touch on the alt season thing. I have to explain what I mean when I use the term alt season versus what I think some people think I would mean. When I say alt season, I mean we generally get into a part of the four-year Bitcoin halving cycle. It's usually right before or just as or just after Bitcoin hits its cycle top. And when you look at the altcoin space, almost everything is green. Almost everything is up. Every shitcoin from you know, pot coin to poop coin to fart coin is up. And by the way, they all exist. All of those freaking exist. Poop coin is a thing. Fart coin is a thing. Fart boy coin. You see how stupid this all is. And doesn't mean they'll get back to their previous all-time high, so don't take it the wrong way. But I think we're starting to see the beginning of a cycle. I am seeing some of these shit coins that have literally no purpose, no utility. They've had no development. Nobody's touched them. Nobody's talked about them in 5 years or more. Green. Green candles. Not moon yet, but up, 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 up. If you're holding on to any dog shit Right. I know some of you still believe in Ethereum and whatever, and there may be a place for those things in the future. It's, you know, it's no second best. It's fifth tier, right, versus first tier in Bitcoin. But, okay, fine. And under clarity, and there might be some carve-outs for some ways that things actually become treated like real securities. You might even see some level of almost a new stock ownership through crypto assets, which was all, you know, kind of what NFTs were sort of kind of presented as, but never really got there. And there's some other ways that you could have like a DAO, right? A decentralized autonomous organization. None of them ever really worked, but I'll just say maybe. Like, I'm not going to say it's impossible. So some shit may stick around for a while, but if you're holding anything that's like you bought because you heard about it somewhere, including here when I was a shit coiner, and you just been sitting there looking at it. If you get a way to take some significant money out of it and get back what you lost or anything close to it, I would take it this time. Now, people always ask me because they know I hold quite a sizable chunk of Ethereum. Does that mean I'll dump it all? I dump Ethereum when it makes sense in my life. And the thing is, I have to pay almost 100% tax on it. It's Ethereum. There's no getting around it. It's, you know, one address type thing. I bought it all from Coinbase when it was under a dollar. So it, every time I do it, it hurts, and I try to spread it out amongst tax years. Ethereum, I think, will be one of the ones that hangs on. I've always said that. I think they're the mother asshole that spawns all shit coins. But I think they'll hang on for quite a while because under this new regulatory framework, they can play either side of it. They can comply with everything, or they can try to claim to be a mature blockchain. So we'll see. We'll see how that works out. But I think when I say the last alt season, I don't mean the last time any altcoins will go up. I mean the last time you're going to see what we've seen every cycle since this shit started, where everybody's up. That's when I always tell you we have the top is about in. When everybody's up a lot, when they all look the same, when you look at poop coin, fart coin, and baby coin, and they all have the same arc, that's usually when everything's about to get cleared out. The difference this time is that's always been aided by levering up. You could have $100 million worth of poop coin and lever against it and borrow against it and buy shit coin XYZ PDQ. You really can't quite do that anymore. Baby poop coin. Yes, it's a real thing. Go look it up. I don't actually know if there's a baby poop coin. I'm being facetious, but my gut is based on everything I've looked up to see, is there one of those? There probably is baby poop or something very similar. BPOP, right? anyway, I had another question, a tax question in a way, but my favorite kind of tax question, a gun tax question. So hidden in the big, beautiful bill, not so hidden, I guess, was a provision to basically remove silencers, aka suppressors, and SBRs from the National Firearms Act. And because Trump wanted to get that bill passed, the Senate Republicans came up with a way to prevent your typical bullshit that can happen in the Senate with filibustering, needing 60 votes for cloture to at least get it to a vote. You don't need 60 votes to pass it, but you need to get 60 votes to allow it to a vote. And the Senate parliamentarian, her job is to say in a bill like that, these particular things cannot be in a bill with this kind of a vote. And a lot of people said she was carrying water for the Democrats. She is a Democrat, whatever. I'm going to tell you, I don't know. I'm not sure. But I do know that that woman caused a lot of grief for the Biden administration doing the same thing. Right? If you go back to like the Inflation Protection Act or whatever, it was a big inflation act that Joe did, where spending money was going to cut inflation somehow, that one. She line-itemed a bunch of shit out of there, too. So it is what it is. But she said that removal of those did not fit under Senate rules. You couldn't put them in there as a complete removal. And if you did that, you couldn't vote on it this way. So the Senate's pretty sneaky compromise was, well, but can we lower the tax? there's a lot of lowering of taxes in the bill. So sure, you could lower tax. Okay, how about zero? So they zeroed it. This could backfire in the future. I'll get to that in a second. But for right now, it's a good thing. And for the next, for the rest of the administration minimum, probably at least several years into the next administration, even as a Democrat, it's probably good to go. So they said the case is zero. Well, the question that I've been getting is, but I went to do it and they still want $200. Yeah, that's because it's a tax and this is a tax law. It takes effect on January 1. So if you want an SBR right now or you want a suppressor right now, you want to be all legal about it so you don't go to prison, which is a good idea, it's $200. On January 1, it becomes $0. Now, there are some lawsuits out there. Kevin's talking about them right there. Palmetto State Armory, Silencer Co., a bunch of people got together, and they're all suing the federal government now. And they're saying it all has to die. There should be no tax stamp required at all because a tax is defined under tax law as something that raises money for the government. And since it's zero, effectively, it's no longer a tax. There's some ways around that. I would give that lawsuit about a 60% chance. I would also say, though, if you want to have some SBRs, if you want to have some suppressors in your life, that I would be ready to go on January 1, 2026, and I would have your funding allocated for your purchases, and I would get it done swiftly, and I would really look at the option. Most of these companies now do an immediate setup of a trust, and your trust owns the stamp, and therefore, because, I mean, the way it works right now is really stupid if you follow the letter of the law. Let's say that Kevin here, right, Kevin and I are out at the range shooting, and I have a rifle with a suppressor on it. It is a completely legal suppressor. I have a tax stamp for it. Yeah? Well, if I hand it to him, he just illegally took possession, and I illegally transferred by the letter of the law. Now, I've not heard of anybody being done up for that, but it certainly could happen. And there are federal assholes in federal agencies like the ATF that if they got the opportunity, I believe they would do it. I believe they would really do it. Whereas I can very quickly add and remove people from my trust. And so I can actually add Kevin or King of Biltong here to my trust. And therefore, they can then use those things as members of the trust. That's why they have that set up. So I would take that approach as well. All right. So now let's talk about what comes between now and the year end. We're about a little over halfway done with the year. We're closer to Christmas than we are to last New Year's. Let that sink in. Tick tock, tick tock. The clock ticks for us all. So what does the rest of the year look like? I think you see a big push on these other crypto laws that we talked about today, like the Clarity Act and the CBDC, the anti-CBDC, basically a ban on CBDCs. I think those both get through by fall. But I think you're going to see less of a huge push for more legislative action for the rest of the year. I think that Trump knew what he wanted, and he's got these other things kind of in motion now. Okay, that's what I wanted. I needed tax cuts. I need a more business-friendly environment. I need these deductions. I need to be able to go out, and I need to go to this is what's going to happen. He's going to be going to companies while he's going to countries. And when I say him, I don't necessarily mean him individually, his people, his proxies. At the same time, they're telling a country, look, we need a trade deal, and we need this bullshit to stop, and these trade imbalances to stop, and if you don't, we're going to tear the fuck out of you. They're going to be going to large companies in those countries and saying, why don't you just consider coming to America and opening a plant here? Open a factory here. What do we need to do to earn your business? Look at the tax policies we have now. And that is a double leverage point. That's like having both of your opponent's thumbs and bending them back at the same time. Because the country knows that you're courting their companies to do business in your country instead of theirs. And if they want to stop that or at least clog the bleeding off a little bit, then they need to make the deal. So I think that you're going to see Bessent and Trump look like Oprah like a week before Christmas. You get a car, and you get a car, and you get a car, and you get a car. Really. On top of this, though, you're going to see a whole litany, potentially, of second-order tariffs. What are those? Those are, well, you know, China makes a deal, but if they're supplying Russia, and Russia doesn't make the deal to end the conflict in Ukraine, then the tariffs automatically go on to China as a sanction. And that could be a fly in the works, so to say, right? A wrench in the works, so to say, there. But I think that pretty much everybody gets a deal except China. And then maybe some Russia fallout. China is going to be a hard one to finally drill down. I honestly think part of the new, what's known to insiders is the Mar-a-Lago Accords, which is a whole new financial system that you're seeing rolled out right now. Crypto and stablecoins and Bitcoin are all part of this, is to once and for all move the United States off dependency on China. We know they're an adversarial nation. We will never not have trade with them. Don't get me wrong. But this, like when, you know, like one in every two products on the shelves in America come from China. When we get the base materials for like all of our rare earth shit, all of our pharmaceuticals, all of that shit's coming from China and a little bit and somewhat from India. And these two nations have basically a lock grip on us. There's a lot of other places that we can get a lot of this stuff from if we don't make it domestically. But we have to cut what comes in from China probably by at least 25% minimum. To have the kind of blue-collar renaissance in America where we start making things in America again. We have to do that. Like, that's how much – it's not about China. It's about you, when you – if you're going to cut your budget at home, the first thing you should look at is any big expense that you have any control over. So your mortgage probably isn't one. It's probably one of your biggest expenses, but – you can't really change the number unless rates drop and you refinance, right? But if they did, you would. If you're smart, you would anyway. Because when we cut a large expense, we have a higher net effect on the overall, right? We can cut a small expense by 100% and do nothing. It's not even 1% of the overall. So when we look at where the trade imbalances are and how much we need to rebuild America – by producing in America again, the logical first place to look is our largest inbound trading partner, our country that we have the largest deficit with, and that's actually not even China. It's Canada. And China next. Canada's our biggest trading partner. But a lot of what we trade with Canada is outside of this production model. There's a lot of energy trading with Canada, for instance. And that's less of an issue than building stuff. Because oil is where it is. It gets refined where it gets refined. Right? But that's where you have to find it. That's where the ability to actually rebalance is. It's in the Chinese market. And so I think you're going to see a lot of pressure on that. So we'll see. But okay, next up then, is AI really coming for your job? And my response to that right now to anybody that says it is maybe, not likely, possibly, and it depends. You know, that's about as clear as mud. Here's what I mean. There's like, my first question would be, what do you do? What do you do? How big is your company and how's it run? A lot of you, if you just looked at that, would immediately go, you know what? My job's probably good for at least 5 to 10 years. My company, like, what do you do? If you work in a shop and you spend most of your time rebalancing and rotating tires and doing tire repairs and oil changes, AI is not coming for your job anytime soon. If you run a landscaping company, cut grass and weed eat for a living, AI is not coming for your job anytime soon. Right? If you work an office job, that's where we get into maybe, probably not. It depends. Well, what do you do? How many people do what you do? That's another way to look at it. Are you the only person that does what you do? Right? I'm not going to say you're definitely okay, because that still would be, well, what is it? But for a lot of you, if you're the only person in your company that does what you do, that's not the place I want to automate first. I want to automate out lots of people, not one person. One person doesn't really do much for me to get rid of them. See, I just like the trade thing with, we have to go to China because that's where the available cuts are to the inbound to be replaced by the domestic production. So if I have a company and I go out on one of my floors, let's say I'm in a 10-story building, we have all the floors occupied, we're a big company. And I go out there and I have a whole bunch of customer service people, I have a whole floor of them. They all do the exact same thing every day. That's my layup. That's where I look at that floor and go, if I can even not get rid of them all, but I can empower the top 25% to do the work of the 75% I'm going to get rid of with AI tools, I'm going to do that. That's a number that goes straight to the bottom line. And I might even say, hey, give all those guys a 20% raise. Because giving people a 20% raise while I cut my overall expenses by 75%, I'm good. So if you're one of those people, are you a top 20%er? And are you liked? That's the other thing. I predict a lot of people losing jobs that their management just doesn't like them for whatever reason. Justified or not, I just don't like Jack. He's an asshole. I want to get rid of him. He's one of our top producers. Yeah, but I don't like him. I'm probably gone. Because you'll be able to bury them in the numbers of people being gotten rid of. You know, is what you do something AI can do? AI can do everything. AI can't even do math very well yet. But it will. But what is your job actually? Are you filing things and firing off emails? That's a pretty low bar. If it actually requires, like, how many outputs are there? There's another way to look at it. How many, like, for each thing that comes in, you got a thing and it comes in and then you have to do something with it. How many potential outs? If it's binary, if this is what you do, blah, 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 approved, blah, 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 denied. If that's your primary job, you're effed. You're effed. I can build anything binary. I can build a system. And I can build a system that can be checked by one person while it does the work of 100. Because it's going to be a three-type output. Absolutely yes. Actually, four types will come out of that from an automated system. Absolutely yes, just do it. Absolutely no, don't do it. Nobody look at it. It's done. It's dead. Probably yes, probably no. And then all that person, the individual, will have to do is make the final determination, kind of second check, yes, AI. And it'll probably be some sort of interface where the person that makes that determination explains to AI why it really was a yes or it really was a no, and that will keep making the system more and more accurate, and you'll go from needing one person to replace 100 to one person to replace 200, one person to replace 500. But while that's going on, unless we solve all the problems in the world, people are going to keep creating business, service, and product to address problems. We'll run out of jobs when we run out of problems. Now, the only thing that kind of upsets that apple cart is, do you really think we need to be in the situation that we're in right now? Does it make sense that almost every household is a two-income household? We might start going back to more one-income households. Or we might start going to a different type of work environment altogether in the future with all this AI. Maybe people don't need to work 5 days a week. Maybe they work three. And maybe parents have some alternating schedule and like still have time off together. I mean, I really don't know. But I think this whole idea that AI is just going to take everybody's jobs is ridiculous. Kevin says, really? You think math would be one of the easiest things for AI to do? If you ask what 4 times 5 plus 4 is, it'll get you that one. But when you ask it to do some math, like, just give it some complex problems, especially when you don't give it the math problem. And what I mean is you give it the situation, it has to develop the problem and then solve it. Yeah, it gets a lot of shit wrong. I've seen it get the same problem, three different answers to three different queries. I've told it it's wrong when it's right. And it said, oh, you're right, I was wrong. Here's the actual number. It has problems, but it's getting better. But I wouldn't trust anything to an AI unit right now without a human on Overwatch. I tell people all the time, when you're using AI, the most important thing is to not let Gelman amnesia harm you. So Gelman amnesia is from Michael Crichton, and it's, you know, you're reading the New York Times, and you read a story at the New York Times about something you're very well informed about, and you immediately go, this is bullshit. And I know it's bullshit because they're wrong about this, this, and this. So their conclusion's in question because I'm well informed about this, and I can tell the person who wrote this article is not, or they have a political agenda, so they're changing things around and they're not using facts. And you know it because you know it, because you know the subject. You turn the page or you flip to the next screen, right? And then you read another article and it's something you don't know anything about, and all of a sudden you believe what you're reading because you forgot what you knew, which is this source is not dependable. That's Gelman amnesia. The way that applies to AI is when you're asking AI about something and you have certain predispositions that you believe, and AI has gotten to where it's trying to please the user more than be accurate, and it picks up on what you want to hear. It starts telling you what you want to hear. You're like, oh, see, I knew it was that way. You got to be really careful with that shit. You got to be really careful with that shit. So I like to use AI mostly for things I am informed about. If I use AI for things that I'm learning about for the first time, then I use AI to develop a learning plan, and I ask for specific resources to gain my learning from. My students, actually, that's what they're doing this week. That's part of their marketing course, is learning how to learn. But they're not asking AI to be the teacher. They're asking AI to be more like the thought partner, the guide, to guide them through a developmental path of learning. Because you can't just trust AI. I've had AI tell me things that are just not true, and then defend them, and then when I say, I want you to explicitly find and list a source. It'll give me a link. I click the link. There's nothing there. It's a 404 page, an error page. And then it'll finally admit you were right. And when I said, why did you lie to me? Because I am programmed to please you, basically. It's a very long, drawn out, Gen Z type groveling answer. But that's the, in the end, because I'm supposed to make you happy. Well, you lying to me doesn't make me happy, and you can't get around it. I just don't think that we're going to get to the point where all our jobs go away. I think that's the biggest pile of shit. And I think the more gray you have in your beard, like old Santa Beard here, the more you realize that. Because we've been through this before, haven't we? We've been through all of this before. So-and-so's going to, and this is all going to go away. Man, you should have seen the freak out. Those of you that are young, when I say young, I mean, let's say 30-ish and down, like 30 and under. When people realized you really could buy shit on the internet, I'm talking about like late 90s, early 2000s, brick and mortar's going to die. Every time I drive past stores, there's freaking cars everywhere, not just grocery stores. But they thought even the grocery stores were going to be gone. Mail, right? At the same time, they were saying that, you know, all the brick and mortar stores are going away. The postal service and even all the, like, the private, you know, because of no mail, because of email. Man, I see mail all the time everywhere. People that still send letters and shit, and people that pay their bills, like, they get a thing in the mail, and they write a check, and they balance their book, and then they send the check in. I don't get it, but people still do it. But we were told that was going to happen. We were told that, oh, by the way, email and the internet were going to destroy the environment. Yeah. Yeah, too much electricity. Like, every time something new comes out, the same song and dance always happens. When they came up with the first sawmills that worked with a water wheel, and then the blade spun, and you could cut a board, there'd be no work anymore for sawmen. The sawmen went on strike. That's a while ago that happened. It's one of the first, like, guild-led strikes in the United Kingdom. Britain at the time was the sawmen strike. And is there any shortage of jobs in the lumber industry today? Like, every time a new technology comes out, everybody believes that it's going to do everything, right? It's going to replace doctors. It's not going to replace doctors. might it give patients a better understanding of their own medical condition? In time, I believe it will. Might it speed up things like reviewing the results of tests and blood work? Sure. But if you think you're going to replace a doctor who goes to school for 4 years, then goes to med school, then does it, his internship and his residency, and then does a fellowship and then becomes a cardiothoracic surgeon with a robot that somebody that's never done a surgery programs, I'm sorry. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Not anytime soon. Will there be a day it'll be like Star Wars, you know? You get your hand chopped off and the droid just fixes it for you? Probably. We are way, way, way away from that. Way away from that. But I have a question. What happens when they all hit a ceiling and they all become equal? This is actually a way more interesting question to me. What if when you go to Gemini or whatever the fuck Meta has or ChatGPT or whatever, and you say blah, 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 and the answer that comes out is very good, very accurate, and across the board almost identical? What happens? What do they compete on then? Think about it. Cost? They're already at a point where the cost is so high on their interim energy use, they barely are making money. You can only drive the price of production, right? There's a cost of production, and the price has to be for sustainability, you need the cost plus margin to work. So you can't cut it down, right? Liberty Cast says truth goes away. No. That would actually be, they wouldn't all be equal. Because that would be an opportunity for someone to build one that told the truth, wouldn't it? So when they're all equal, when they're all accurate equally, what happens? What do you compete on? Features. Same features. It's all the same. How do you compete? Name brand? To a point. First mover advantage with installed pace, to a point. No, I think the way you compete is integration. You integrate. And I think you're going to see some antitrust shit in AI that's a lot like some of the stuff that happened over like Windows with Microsoft in the 90s and into the 2000s and all of the shit that went along with that, antitrust. But I think you're going to get to a point where every device has integrated AI. Your smart TV will have integrated AI. Your TV will help you find your programming based on what you already watch. We already have it to a degree. You know, if you're a Netflix user, like your next watch is or whatever. But imagine a television that finds things for you. Hey, did you know this? And then I think that this is where we kind of dovetail back to the beginning with all these stable coins. See, stable coins will enable something that nothing but Bitcoin Lightning has really been able to do well until now. And running stable coins on Bitcoin will do this as well. And that is allow micropayments. A dollar is a micropayment, okay? $1.50 is a micropayment. If you buy MSB at $5 a month for me, I pay $1.44 a month in fees to take that $5 in. That's why you don't really hear me pushing monthly very much. It's probably my least profitable product, even though if you buy a year for $50, you save $10. I make more money. I don't pay much higher of a fee for a $50 charge than I do for a $5 charge. So I can't sell you something for a dollar. I can't sell you something for 75 cents and use a standard merchant account. How does that play into AI? Well, what you're going to have is AI paying AI to do AI things, different agents, different actions. You're going to have like also kind of works really well with Lightning as well in like batched performances per day and a single final settlement with an internal accounting. That'd be another reason somebody might build a stable coin asset to use within an organization or between organizations. And if you think about it from a user level, you're on the internet, right? You're on the internet. Somebody posts a link to an article the article's on one of the, you know, New York Times or some shit. You click the link, and it says, basically, piss off. This is for subscribers. Subscribe for $100 a year, and you can read this article. And you're like, I don't care about this article that much, right? How often does that happen if you're an active internet user that pays attention to the news? Probably a lot. And the first thing you do is you cut and paste the, if you're smart, you still want to know, you cut and paste the headline, and you'll find some secondary source covering it, maybe even almost completely replicating what was said in that article. But if you could click here and read the article for a quarter, not give them any information, just click 120. You know, there's a lot of people, $5 a week, buying shit like that. Like, it's an information budget. No problem. All of this is going to start integrating. Liberty Cast said Claude integrates with Stripe already. Yeah. Everything will be integrated. I mean, right now, I don't ever use it, but when I get a text message, I have AI tools integrated into my phone already in my chat program that tells, like, you can say, oh, thanks a lot, right? As a YouTube creator, when I answer comments on YouTube, when I'm logged in and I'm in the back office where they batch all the comments into one flow for me so I can answer everybody, there's all kinds of pre-written responses, and they're getting more and more accurate, more and more specific. They used to be very generic. Oh, thanks for that. Thanks for watching. Stuff like that. Now those answers are starting to sound like a human wrote them. This is, and so the monetary model is going to come in more company to company than can, this is going to be more of a B2B space than a B2C space. Companies that want to provide a service or a platform but don't want to be in the AI business will be paying the AI integration costs through APIs to provide AI as part of their product. That's where I see this going. And there's a lot in that. That's a place, you know, you guys that are investors, you need to be looking at who's going to be the Google of that space. Who's going to be the Google of that space? It's not necessarily an AI leader right now. Right, it's someone that can do the integration. It's going to be someone that can say, it's going to be the company that comes at it. I think we're going to have a company in this space that they are going to use the term vendor agnostic. Vendor agnostic. I've always hated that term, but I accept it because it's the term used in the industry. Right, agnostic means I don't know. Right, that's a agnostic is not atheist light, by the way, when we go to religion. Agnostic means I know that I don't know. Atheism or theism are statements of faith. Gnostic and agnostic are statements of knowledge. So it's like I don't know the vendors, but what they really mean is I don't care. I don't care. When I was with Sirion, one of the companies I had with Neil, and we worked with mobile carriers like T-Mobile, Sprint, AT&T, Verizon, we described our product set as vendor agnostic. In other words, it doesn't matter that you're T-Mobile and the last people we worked with were AT&T. Our product set works because it works on industry standard. And so we can integrate, we can find stranded capital, we can see where new buildouts need, we can figure out all the things that you're paying 500 engineers every year to do. Our software can look at it and give you the answer now. And we were doing that shit in like 2006, 2007. And it worked. It worked. And I'm going to tell you the other reason I'm, because of that experience, I'm a little less worried about AI taking all of our jobs than you guys are. The hardest thing to sell to those companies is probably the product we had. The product that could put billions of dollars in our pockets. And you know why? We had to sell it to lead engineers that knew that their people were the ones that were going to get laid off. You wouldn't believe the amount of resistance that came just from that. And those are mega corporations where you think money means everything, but in the end, people make decisions. So just something else to think about. All right. Then the last thing I want to talk, I want to talk about my mushrooms real quick. And just something weird that's going on. And I'm wondering if anybody out there has any idea, why this is happening, because on one level, it's a good thing. Probably my favorite mushroom that you can grow readily is called King Trumpet. It's a type of oyster. They get really thick stems, and the stem is the money, right? That's what you want to eat, is that stem. Most oyster mushrooms grow as caps, and they have very short stems. All my oyster varieties are growing very much like King Trumpet, and here's what I mean for those on the video. Those are some blue oysters. Those are not King Trumpets. Those are blue oysters that I harvested yesterday. At least I harvested the biggest ones, and I'm going to pull the rest of them off today. And for those not looking, the stems on the biggest ones are friggin', you know, they're thick. They're not my wrist size, but they're like the size of like a kid's wrist. And to kind of drive it home, there's the three biggest ones in my hand after I picked them. Okay, it's one thing that the blue oysters are doing this. I've got pinks pinning right now, and pinks are just always that giant cluster. They're lighter in color, and it looks like they're going to have big stems too. And I'm not sure how that's going to work out because blues, the stems are usually really edible. They're soft. Pinks, like you just got to get rid of the stems. So I'll see what happens here. But when I say it's not a problem, I love them growing that way. The fact that I can take a blue oyster, which is really easy to produce, and get that, that's a great yield. It's delicious tasting. When you cut them in medallions and cook them in butter with a little Old Bay, they taste like freaking scallops. They really do, right? They taste like scallops. It's pretty amazing what they taste like. But it's not usual, and it's not typical. And my problem is I don't know why it's happening, so I don't know how to make it happen on purpose, and I don't know how to tell somebody else how to make it happen on purpose until I figure out how to make it stop happening and then make it happen again. Find the variable. And the variable that I was told to go at, and AI agreed with this, along with several other informed mushroom people, is CO2. You have too much CO2. You don't have enough free air exchange. So I had set my fan to be 15 on, 45 off on the air exchange. So I upped it to 30 on and 30 off. 15 on, 15 off, 15 on, 15 off, like that. So 30 minutes every hour. I'm running at full speed. Not full speed. I'm running it full time now. It's just running nonstop and UV lighting. I put UV lighting on top of the Martha tent. So I don't know what the hell's going on. But again, I've got, and I'll see what they look like tomorrow when they really begin to fruit. I've got pinks coming on like that now. And I just have never seen anything like this. Now, my other stuff fruits normal form. I've had pepinos. I've had chestnuts. They look like they're supposed to. I've done shiitakes. They look like they're supposed to. It's only oysters doing this. So if somebody out there has any idea what the hell's going on, because I just can't believe it's a CO2 issue. So when mushrooms fruit, the fruiting bodies act more like humans than plants. They take in oxygen and they literally exhale CO2. So you can end up with a high CO2, and that apparently can make large form stem. It can change the form of the fruiting body. I don't know how that's possible. I'm running that fan, you know, to where it sounds about like a fan running on a computer, like a computer fan, about, you know, maybe 20% of its capacity. And I'm running it 24/7, and I got three full spectrum lights up on the top. I have no idea. But I'm enjoying the hell out of it. And man, if I could grow pinks like that, because pinks are fast. I mean, I can inoculate a block. Like, it's a clean block. I add spawn to it in about 10 days. And it'll fruit about 3 to 4 days after I put it in there. So if they end up being good, but every pink I've ever done up till now, that stem sucks. So we'll see how this works. But if anybody has any idea, Celtic Dragon says mushrooms taking oxygen exhaled CO2. Wow, like us. I love mushrooms. And then Angie says, am I pulling air from inside or outside? I'll come back around to you in the Q&A, Angie, but it's from inside. It's from inside, but it's not a high CO2 environment, that's for sure. It really just can't be. It just can't be. Anyway, but now you're making me think a little bit there, Angie. We'll see. Okay, now I just want to give you a philosophical ending to today. And I want this to take you back to what I said last week about, you know, building wealth with Bitcoin. The simple rule: end every day with more sats than you started with. That's all you have to do. And the younger you are, the more true that is. Now, I want to fix it because I had some pushback from that by email and on social media too. So I want to fix it for some of you. What if I said the secret to building wealth is to end every day with more dollars than you started with? You might say that's not so easy to do, Jack. But you'd say that's true, right? If I have more dollars every day, then I'm building wealth. The problem is that inflation's eating that wealth. So then I'll go back to, from a pure performance standpoint, is Bitcoin a superior asset to the US dollar? And unless a person is a retarded boomer or something like that, they're going to say, yes, of course it is. So it doesn't change, does it? But I don't care if it's Bitcoin. I don't care if you're investing in real estate, gold, saving dollars. You want to end the day with more value under your control than you started it with. Okay? Now, how do you do that? We all have incomes. If we didn't have any income at all, we'd be in the poorhouse. So we all have incomes and we all have outflows. And the only way to do this is one way or another, don't spend all the money you make on things that are not long-term assets, right? When you buy a car, it's not a long-term asset. It's a short-term asset, but at least it's an asset. When you buy a meal out, when you buy a coffee, it's not an asset at all. It's a pure expense. So the only way you get more every day is to create a surplus by reducing the output of waste, period. So this is the philosophy for you to adopt, to add on, to have more at the end of every day. The most important trades you make happen every day, and it is a trade between you and your future self. That is the most important trade you'll ever make, and you make it again multiple times every day. You're trading with your future self. I'm Jack. I'm 53 years old. Everything I do today, I'm making a trade with 10 years from now, 63-year-old Jack. See how that works? Every dollar I spend is a trade with my future self. When I say I'm going to take this 10 bucks, I'm going to buy Bitcoin, I'm telling my future self, I'm putting this away for you. When I spend that money, I'm taking it away from future Jack. When I go buy avocado toast and a latte and a pup cup for Lucy the dog, not even anything wrong with it. But let's be honest, what I've done, that could have been invested in something for future me. I've decided that my short-term happiness exceeds my long-term desires for that particular chunk of change. And when I decide not to expend it, not to use my wealth to procure a temporary moment of happiness, but to invest in long-term happiness, and I defer it, I'm trading with my future self. I'm giving something up today so that future Jack can have it tomorrow. And if I do it right and long enough, at some point I'm actually giving up what I have today to leave it to my children, my grandchildren, and my great-grandchildren. That's generational wealth. But it all starts with the trade between you and you. And I think one of the biggest problems I've had is I've talked to younger folks, including family, about this subject, is I haven't framed it that way nearly as much as I should have. When I tell them, don't waste all your money, what they hear is, you don't want me to spend money. I never said that. I've gotten that from family when I've said, you need a budget. And I have certain family members that have what I would call a shopping problem, right? A shopping habit. And that, well, you want me to spend money, less money or whatever. I want you to be a grown fucking adult. And I want you to set your own limits. But the missing piece, I feel, has always been, but who are you doing it for? I'm not asking you to do it for me because I want it. Every dollar you spend today, you don't have to. You're taking it from future self, your future self. You understand that? Today, at some point during this day, you're going to look around, okay? You're going to look around. You're going to see something you want, and you're going to pull out a credit card or a bank card or a freaking Cash App or Cash Money, and you're going to make an exchange, and you think that trade is between you and the person at the coffee shop, you and that person at the garden store, you and that person at the car accessory market, you and Amazon.com, right? You think that's who that trade is between. And on one level it is. But it's also a trade between you and your future self. And so I think if we just always said every time, I'm taking this from myself in the future to have it now, long term we would make better decisions. And we'd start to look at things from a standpoint of either I need to figure out how this can save me money, or maybe I need to not do it, or I need to go ahead and do it, but I need to understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I need to be asking myself, is it worth it to have this now versus what it could be tomorrow? Just like I said in the episode about Bitcoin and building wealth, if I told you every penny you give me today, I will put a dime in a jar, and 10 years from now, I'll give you that jar of dimes, you'd probably put a lot of pennies in there. If you can't do 10 to 1 over 10 years, you're investing in the wrong thing. I'm just saying. Anyway, with that, I do have a few questions here. Let me mark one more comment. Let's go through real quick, kind of lightning round it. A question from Jeff, what's the crown number 2 stand for? I don't know what that means. I don't know what he's asking me. Jeff, if you're still here, explain that because I don't get it. Or if somebody else knows what he's asking me about, let me know. Question from VanDew1. Dude, I got to have that shirt. Give me a source, please, at the end. So this shirt, like many of my shirts, is made by John Willis at SOE Tactical Gear. For those that can't see it, it's all the things that were going to happen all the years. 1960, all the oil would be gone in 10 years, and it just progresses. And all we got was more taxes in the end, right? And more control and more government. You can't get this shirt. John does his on limited runs. SOETacticalgear.com, you can go to his t-shirt section. Most of the stuff that's been done in the past, though, is sold out. He comes out with like a new shirt every week. So if you see something you like from him, you want to get it. He doesn't keep them around. It's more like a collection type thing. So that's the source of the shirt, but as long as I've had this one, I know you can't get it anymore. Jesse says, are there any other custom-developed AIs like Brighton AI for other issues yet? I don't know what Brighton AI is. But I'm guessing from the way that that question came in, it's like an AI built for a specific niche. I think that's going to be another way you'll see differentiation. Except when it comes to the LLMs, I mean, what you're seeing right now with ChatGPT is like, you know, they have a GPT that's like a general use GPT, and they have one that's better for coding and stuff like that. It's like a bifurcation, breakup, and rehypothecation. Like, I think what they're going to do in the end is they're going to have a single product that does everything. But there may be some very specialized work with some unique niches carved out, but I don't know what Brighton is, so I can't comment on it. Celtic Dragon says, what are you growing that huge mushroom in? Container, substrate, et cetera. It's just sawdust spawn. They call them fruiting blocks, but it's just sawdust spawn. So basically you buy a 5-pound block of spawn, and then you kind of fold over the extra part of the bag a certain way. And I usually put rubber bands around mine that keep air from getting down too low, because air exposure is one of the things that causes the fruiting to happen. Once that's done, you cut some slits with a razor knife and it fruits through the plastic bag. That's how those are fruiting. And that's where, if I go back right now, real quick, I can show you that's exactly what this is. So that bag right there is they fruited on that bag exactly how it looks. It's just a 5-pound block of spawn, fully myceliated. And then eventually it just fruited out of the slit in the top of the bag. That's all that is. So that's how that all works out. All right. Moving on. Angie says, are you pulling air in from your room or the outside? Again, it's being pulled in from the room, not outdoors, because that would be much warmer air, and that ain't happening. But, I mean, this house is not, like, airlocked. though I'm betting most of the airflow is going in from the bottom because the fan's low. So if the fan's low, then you're pulling out from the bottom. You're probably pulling in from the bottom. So there might be some ways I can play with that a little bit and see. But I don't think there's any way with the way this house is that you're getting high CO2 in that environment with that much airflow. Not high enough to account for it by itself. And then even if we were, when I started changing the fan frequency, it should have at least reduced it. If anything, it looks like it's more now than it was, which is kind of crazy. Jesse says, I think that also applies to how you spend your time, example, procrastinating. Yes. Yes, everything is a trade with future Jesse, right? When you take a day and you don't do any work, then Jesse today gets fuck-off time. But future Jesse reaps no reward from today's work. Different way to look at it. If you work really hard today, but it doesn't actually do anything for your future self except make money, then future Jesse gets the wear and tear on the body and nothing if you spend all the money. Because some things that we work really hard at actually move our whole life ahead, and some are just what we have to do to keep a job. So there's a big difference in working really hard in your own business and adding value to your business versus working really hard in somebody else's business and adding value to their business. See, when I work really hard in my business, when I run a sale or something and I have extra windfall income come in, I get 100% of the results of that today. But I also, if the business becomes more healthy and has more life in it, then future Jack gets to have a thriving business. So the more of an employee you are, the more important it is that you carve out surplus of the cash flow itself, because you can't just enhance the value of the business to give to your future self. But Jesse, you're dead on. Everything you do, every step you take, right, you are trading with your future self. Let's see. Liberty Cast, do you think UBI is probable in the next 10 years? No. Nope. I don't even need to answer any more of the question because I don't think it's probable. I don't think it's probable at all. I don't think there's any likelihood of UBI the way you're asking the question, like at a national level in the next 10 years. It's just, I don't think it's going to happen. It's not going to happen at all. So what I recommend you do once it happens is irrelevant because it's not going to happen. The socialist utopia that we're promised is never coming. Again, I still don't know what Jeff T was asking me. What's the crown number two stand for? I don't know what that means. So I guess no one else did either. Jeff, if you had to bail and you want to email me when you hear this later, tell me what you meant. I'll get it on a future show. With that, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. Thanks to everybody for tuning in today. And please do remember that the most important trade that you will ever make are the countless trades you make every day with your future self. And every action, every inaction, every expenditure, every bit of savings, every investment is a trade with future you. Take care, guys. I'll catch you tomorrow with another one.
Should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay.